Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Hello, Marcus. How are you?
We've done that, I thought.
Yeah, I think so, but we're going to do it. I understand you're a little bit sick today, so thank you for coming in.
Yeah, a little bit husky, so if I have to stop and have a cough, then
That's fine. And I mentioned it before, but if my eyes glaze over, I promise I'm listening. I'm just not very good with anything kind of sciencey. So we'll start off with a surge in drug-resistant HIV. What does that mean?
Yeah, so this is a little bit worrying. So as you may know, HIV treatments have gotten better over the last 20, 30 years. And a lot of people are able to live with HIV now, and as long as they keep up their treatment. But a survey over the last four years by the World Health Organization saw that at least a dozen countries in Africa, Asia, and in the Americas have surpassed acceptable levels of drug resistance against two of the particularly big drugs, backbone HIV drugs, is efavirenz and nevirapine. I probably said those completely wrong.
It's fine.
Yeah. So people living with HIV take a sort of a cocktail of drugs, and these are called antiretroviral therapies. But the virus itself can change, it can mutate, and it seems like it's mutated into a particularly drug-resistant form for these two drugs. And in 12 nations, they found that more than 10% of adults with HIV have developed resistance.
And that's
a sort of a threshold level, because above 10%, they say it's not really safe to prescribe those medications to the rest of the population, because it's just going to build and build and build more resistance.
So what does that mean for the people in those countries then? What is there to do about that?
Well, there are alternatives. There are alternative medications. One in particular, I'm just looking at my notes, called... I'm going to say this wrong again. There is an alternative. Let's not even try to say it.
Okay.
And so people are starting to say, well, we should be moving more towards this sort of new therapy for which or against which the likelihood that the virus is going to sort of mutate is smaller, so that there's less chance that the resistance could build. But looking at the statistics on this, there's some interesting sort of trends here. So it tends to affect, and I don't know why, but it tends to affect women more than men. So overall, about 12% of the women surveyed had a drug-resistant form of HIV, but only 8% of men. Whether that's a biological factor or more social factor, I don't know. The causes, so some of the countries where this is occurring, Honduras, Cuba, South Africa, Nicaragua, Papua New Guinea, so it's across the world, Uganda, Namibia, so quite a few countries. The causes of this are likely related to when people interrupt treatment. So people take it for a while, but there's sometimes a stigma involved in taking these medications, so people stop.
Okay, why is there a stigma involved?
Well, a stigma in having HIV or admitting that you've got HIV, And sometimes people take it during pregnancy to prevent their babies becoming infected, and then stop when they've given birth. So the baby's okay, but then they've stopped their own treatment. So this sort of activity tends to lead to resistance. And in fact, the prevalence of resistance in people who restarted those medications was over 20% compared to less than around about 10%. It's definitely, if you're taking these medications, keep taking them. Don't stop.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll move on to the next story. So there's no, I don't know what this means, but there's no evidence for globally coherent warm and cold periods over the pre-industrial common era. Please explain that to me.
I'm sorry, the title's a bit difficult to interpret. So I just saw this paper in Nature, and I thought it looked interesting. So it seems like over the last 2,000 years, which they're calling the common era, there's been cold periods and warm periods. And it's been sort of thought that there was the Little Ice Age sort of a few hundred years ago, and it was sort of considered, well, maybe the Little Ice Age was everywhere. In other words, spatially coherent. In other words, if it was cold in Europe, it was cold in the Americas, it was cold in Africa, it was cold in Asia.
Right.
But these scientists have started to look into a little bit more detail and said, okay, well, if there was a cold period at a certain period here, does that match up with other periods elsewhere? And this is sort of relevant because the current warming that we're all experiencing, climate change and global warming, is everywhere, right? It's here, it's in across Asia and America and so on. And so if this was, if this sort of trend, so the sort of the spatially coherent, in other words, it always occurred in the same place, occurred at other times in history, then maybe that's less support for man-made global warming, in fact. So what they did is they looked at reconstructing the climate, or lots of evidence for reconstructing the climate for the past 2,000 years, and they really found no evidence for this global coherence. In other words, the Little Ice Age is a good example. So during the 15th century, there was a cold period in the Eastern Pacific. Mm. During the 17th century, it was a cold period in Northwest Europe, in Southeast and North America, and the 19th century over most of the remaining regions. So these were not all at the same time. There were cold periods, but they occurred at different times. And whenever they did find coherence, in other words, cold periods occurring at the same place in different regions, it was sort of consistent with stochastic variability, so just random, in other words. So randomly, it was cold here, and it was cold here as well, by chance.
Right.
Yeah. And it just provides more evidence that anthropogenic global warming, in other words, man-made global warming, is certainly not only unparalleled in terms of the temperature rises, but it's unprecedented in spatial consistency. In other words, it's happening everywhere, and right. That's never really happened before.
It's never happened before because it's not random.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
That one. I just wanted to say, so it's more evidence? It's just more evidence?
It's just more evidence. That we need. As if we needed any more, but yeah, it's just more evidence.
Okay.
Cowboy.
And I'm going to turn that mic off. There we are. I've got it down. Okay. And our final story here from you, poo transplants can help mice live longer.
Yeah, wow. This is slightly gross.
That's fine.
So it seems like... There are relationships between aging and your microbiome, and the microbiome is this the bacteria that live in your gut, and there are literally trillions of bacteria that live inside of you.
Oh, that's a nice thought.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, doing all sorts of jobs, mostly beneficial. A new study in mice suggested that if you were able to change your microbiome, in other words, change the bacteria in your gut. You can delay aging.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So is that taking out all of the kind of the older bacteria and then putting in newer ones? Or what's the process of that?
Well, it's adding in newer bacteria. So hence the poo transplant. All right. So there's lots of bacteria in fecal matter.
Right.
And you pop it back in.
Ooh, okay.
That's probably not how you do it, but whatever. But you can change your microbiome, and this has beneficial effects. So this idea isn't new. In 4th century China, this is gross. A doctor told patients they could cure their diarrhea by consuming fresh stool from a healthy neighbor. So this is the first time this was tried. I don't know if it worked or not. It doesn't say. More recently, people have shown in clinical trials that fecal transplants are a good treatment for Clostridium difficile, which is a bacteria that grows in your bowel, so these infections, which causes diarrhea and things. So maybe it did work.
Yeah, because I have IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, and I had a lovely mate tell me once, this is great new thing where if you eat a healthy gut person's poop, it'll cure me.
It'll make you live forever, apparently.
Oh, that too. So, you know.
Did you try it?
No, I have not. But look, I'm not saying no.
You're not saying no. Okay, so you're open to eating poop. That's lovely. Yeah, well, I was going to say it's been tried for IBS as well and constipation. Mm. Yeah, lovely. But anyway, age-related diseases often go hand in hand with things that go wrong with your intestines, with your gut. And when you disturb the balance of bacteria down there, bad things can happen. So what they did is they looked at the microbiome of five children with something called progeria, which is a genetic disorder that causes premature aging.
Okay.
And they also looked at the microbiome of more than a dozen mice, and they were, which had been genetically modified to exhibit progeria-like symptoms.
Mm. Okay, so Benjamin
sort of
Button.
Rapid onset, but that sort of. Okay. Well, now that was backwards, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the movie in a while.
Okay, something like that. And both the children and the mice developed increased. excuse me. Both the children and the mice developed increasingly severe. Intestinal problems as their disease progressed. Mm. But when they tried this in a group of centenarians, 17 centenarians, who had, obviously they were 100 years old, so they'd aged successfully, they found any sign, they didn't find any signs of gut problems in these older people.
Mm.
And so they wanted to see whether changing the microbiomes of mice with progeria symptoms made a difference in the progression of their disease. So what they did is they took the bacteria from the feces of healthy mice and put them into the guts of the affected mice.
Mm-hmm.
And within a few weeks, the progressions of the symptoms of the mice with progeria began to slow down. They didn't lose weight as quickly as their untreated counterparts. They didn't experience low blood sugar. And these were common symptoms. But they also, it's a side effect, good side effect, lived nearly 15% longer than the mice with progeria.
Okay.
Okay. So the untreated mice lived 160 days versus about 140 days. On the other hand, when they give the fecal transplant to healthy mice, if they gave healthy mice feces from the mice with progeria, their health suffered.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. So they got less healthy and they died earlier.
Yeah. Well, somebody's just texted in and they said, "Hey, enough of the poo stories. I'm trying to eat my lunch."
Well, the upshot is, and I'll cut this short because people really need to eat their lunch. This is a treatment that a lot of people are looking at. So not eating poo, but treating aging and other diseases with probiotics, changing your gut biome. And we're not there yet with extending age, but there's a lot of work that involves the microbiome, and it sort of is, there's good sort of outcomes on the horizon, I think.
So ultimately, this is about people trying to live longer, though, isn't it?
Well, it's trying to live longer. That's the headline side effect, all right. But it's also treating disease and treating illness, and just improving your overall health.
And
having a healthy gut.
And is it the only way to do that is through poo transplants?
People aren't going to be transplanting poo.
Okay.
I think people are going to be finding some way of ingesting healthy bacteria or replacing the flora in their gut with healthy flora.
I feel like this is not a new thing, though. That, like you say, there's obviously historical attempts at doing this.
Yeah,
and people have said
I think so.
Gut health is pretty important.
And I think they're linking it to more and more illnesses. I know autoimmune conditions are often linked to gut microbiomes and lots of other things as well. So look out for more poo.
I'll be keeping a very close eye on this story.
I really eat shit, you know.
Thanks, Sherry. Thank you for your time today, Marcus. It's been a pleasure.
You're very
Thank
welcome.
You. Yeah.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology. Red